Practical Work on Self, Chapter 6, Struggle of the Sorcerers. Ordinarily, the war of the forces of darkness and light just happens mechanically within the machine. It is uncontrolled and wasted. We must find a way to organize it and make it profitable to our work. The teacher may set the stage and throw the spotlights on something of importance, but ultimately you are the directors, stage managers, choreographers, dancers, and audience of your work ballet. A ballet of work can be staged only if we know the characteristics of its two powerful mutual antagonists. The Prince of Darkness, who dwells in darkness and whose vision is fixated on the light, representing the awakened forces of light, and the Prince of Light, representing the sleeping forces of darkness. Although they both use the same methods and their armies are composed of exactly the same soldiers, when one or another becomes active, their minions are of two completely opposed characters. The attention of the followers of the Prince of Light is fixated on the objects of fascination which are common to the sleeping state of the machine, and is violently opposed to the awakening influence of the followers of the Prince of Darkness. Ordinarily, their warfare is not organized and therefore is useless for our work. We must find a way to organize their war and make it profitable to our work in much the same way that munitions manufacturers and other industrialists foment and feed a war by providing material and continually aggravating the antagonists against each other. It is in our interest to keep them in continual struggle. In the ordinary human biological machine, we find, if we take the trouble to look, deep contradictions of feelings, thoughts, memories, phrases, and manifestations, all of which are isolated from one another by memory buffers. Each only one small fraction of some unknown and chaotic whole. All these are quite powerfully opposed to one another, and if they were not isolated by powerful mental and emotional buffers, they could not exist peacefully together in the same organism. Science will one day come to discover that every single cell in the muscular system of the machine can function as a storage sector for moods, ideas, manifestations, and memories. These are stored at random, without regard to logic or reason, because there's no presence of attention which is able to correctly categorize each impression as it enters the biological machine. If we were to suddenly see and not just vaguely feel all these contradictions in ourselves at the same time, without the usual organic buffers, we would feel that we had gone mad. In order to function, the machine has, somewhere along the line, placed buffers as isolating devices between these inner contradictions. It is because of these buffers that we are ordinarily able to exist very calmly despite our continually shifting centrum of gravity and a set of opinions, ideas, and moods every moment or two. A human machine cannot live long without buffers. Either the contradictions must be isolated in some way, or the machine must be tucked safely away in the lunatic asylum. While the machine cannot exactly destroy its conscience in order to be free to seek perpetual gratification, the emotional centrum, which is the activating factor of conscience, can be put to sleep by isolating the machine's contradictory states. These contradictions, if taken altogether, form the fragmented identity of the machine. It is thanks to the incessant chatter of automatic inner dialogue and running commentary on our experience, which goes on continuously between these isolated fragmentary identities, that we attribute to ourselves what we call consciousness. In a rough translation of Descartes, I talk to myself, therefore I am. All this cannot help affecting adversely the transformational function of the machine. These very strong buffers have arisen in the machine over the course of years in order to prevent total breakdown. Should these buffers be tampered with by an amateur, such as the contemporary clinical psychologist, the biological machine is quickly reduced to the unquestioning, compulsive madness of ordinary social organic pursuits. It is vital to understand this artificial isolation occurs only because each facet of personality is stored in a different part of the machine. This occurs haphazardly, and any part of the machine's personality may be stored anywhere and be activated into reflex response by the most seemingly unrelated stimuli. In the study of these buffered contradictions, we must notate and categorize to ourselves the various states of our fragmentary identities, which we are able to observe as they become active in the machine. It is to these fragmentary states and not to ourselves that we should attribute all of our attitudes, ideas, power, initiative, presence, and good taste. The human biological machine is directed by the machine's simulation of intelligence, not the real intelligence which could be provided by the presence of the non-phenomenal self in the awakened machine. In a human biological machine in which each buffer encapsulates a fragmentary identity, a continually shifting centrum of gravity is changing in what may appear to be random patterns, provides the appearance of a very complicated gem of many facets, but which is actually a very uncomplicated lump of carbon in the grip of certain laws from which we can free ourselves by awakening the machine. The machine's story is a revelation of these contradictions, and by a true confession we can effect their eventual reconciliation, which we can call the process of redemption. By telling the real life history of the machine and not some fragmentary fantasy composed for the protection of the vanity of the machine, thus blending these contradictions, we can repair the past and redeem the machine as a transformational apparatus. To blend these contradictions, it is only necessary to remove the buffers which have been placed between them, which is accomplished by the gentle art of exposure to the light of confession. Ordinarily, we know only one third of the life story of the machine at any given moment, depending upon which fragmentary identity is active at the time. In this sense, that side of ourselves which we believe we know best and which seems to us to be our only friend is actually our deadliest enemy in the work. In addition to telling the true story of the machine's life, we can use daily situations with potentially conflicting aims to help us stage the ballet, the struggle of the sorcerers. For example, when we are tired, we can refuse to lie down and rest. We may even do very hard work, like dig a hole or build a wall. We can, if we're attracted to sweets, place before the machine a mound of chocolate, and then for as long as possible, at least as long as it takes for the candy to rot, deny ourselves this little indulgence. Of course, after the candy rots away, self-denial is easy. We can force our biological machines to work at a different tempo than usual. We can refuse to express pleasure or displeasure in the usual ways. We can intentionally keep company with someone who ordinarily repels us, especially one whose chemistry repels us. To force conflicting ideas to reconcile, we must be able to, if necessary, lie down and at the same time convince ourselves that we're standing. These small conflicts are easy to arrange. Later, to stage a real ballet, we must entangle these two powerful sorcerers in a genuine struggle for survival. The ballet must have a great conflict in order to attract and hold a struggle between these great forces. No matter which side wins, it comes to the same end because both roles are played by the same actor, the empty struggling against the void.